Good afternoon, everyone, and thank you for joining us for February's Exotics Club webinar. I'm delighted to welcome back to Webinar Club our speaker for today, lecturer at the Royal Dick School of Veterinary Studies based at the University of Edinburgh, Emma Keeble. Thank you, Emma. I'm now going to hand over to you.
Thank you very much, Emma. It's a pleasure to be talking again, and thank you to everyone for attending. Today's webinar is going to be on analgesia and exotic pet species, and I thought we would consider the three main sort of groups of species that I would see in general practice, birds, reptiles, and some small mammals as well. So we'll work our way through the webinar, and obviously if you've got any questions, please don't hesitate to ask as we go along. I think for me, thinking about exotic animals, why is it different and what are the particular problems when we're trying to decide on appropriate analgesia for a particular species? And I think the problem is that there are so many variables, it can actually get quite confusing. If you start looking at references, if you start looking at different species' reaction to drugs, then There is quite a reasonable wealth of information out there, but it can actually be quite confusing as to what is the most appropriate analgesic for the animal that you have. And I think also with exotic pets, we have this difficulty in actually recognizing signs of pain. And again, more and more work is being done in this area, but we're still very much behind in terms of dog and cat medicine. What is published can be difficult to interpret. So we might have published information about blood percentages of drug, but we might not actually know whether that's going to have an effect in that animal and actually reach an analgesic effect. We don't perhaps know how long the drug might last, whether it actually works. Also, we worry about safety, especially in very small exotic species. Overdose has been recorded, particularly of opioids, and it can cause respiratory depression. So, you know, there is a lot of information out there, but it is very challenging and very confusing at times to try and determine what exactly is the best analgesic for your patient. And I'm hoping today with this webinar that we'll go through that and try and unravel some of those concerns and actually come up with some good sound therapeutic regimens that we can use in practice. I think because of these concerns, often we as vets are particularly bad at providing appropriate analgesia, and I'm continuously reassessing my analgesic protocols, and it's interesting as newer papers come out, you start thinking, actually, is what I'm doing the best for this animal? There have been some good ones in rabbits looking at buprenorphine doses and whether this actually does have a good analgesic effect in severe pain. I think also if you don't know the species involved, and there can be so many different animals presented, you know, geckos, tortoises, snakes, and any number of the small mammal exotic pets, we may well not know what is the most appropriate drug to use. And then, as I mentioned, all these other factors like frequency, side effects, dose rates, longevity, and then on top of that, how do we recognize pain? And the changes can be very subtle, particularly in reptiles. And if you're not dealing with these animals on a regular basis, it can be quite difficult to assess. We can also have innate behavioral responses, particularly of prey species, where they won't actually show signs of pain because they would be predated on. So I think as a general take-home rule, think about things that would be painful in other species and assume that it would be painful in our exotic pets. So I just want to briefly sort of look at how we assess pain in the different groups of animals that I've just talked about, starting with birds in particular. Interestingly, obviously, there can be very specific targeted signs of pain to an area. So this particular picture shows the cockatiel that had chewed its foot. If we had pain potentially in a wing, we might see an obvious wing droop. Now, that can sometimes be difficult to determine or can be very subtle. And actually, often I find with the cetaceans, as you go to look at the bird, they'll lift the wing up and pretend that nothing's wrong. So it might be something that we have to do casually from a distance, or even sort of get owners to assess at home. Also with birds, we do often see severe self-trauma if they're in pain. So animals that might be coming in looking as if they're perhaps feather plucking, particularly parrots, maybe that's actually a sign of internal pain. And a lot of these birds I see plucking on the sort of axilla, under the sort of sides, and you often do wonder, is this actually referred pain, perhaps from an enlarged liver or sacculitis? And that actually seems to be quite common. Thinking also about birds of prey, if we've placed an external fixator, we do also quite commonly see birds trying to attack the pins or chewing at certain areas of the leg. And again, is that because they're in pain? And the type of pain obviously we'll come on to discuss. There could be more general signs in birds. So birds in particular, obviously cetaceans are very social animals, and we might see an animal trying to sort of distance itself from owners. It could perhaps become more aggressive. It might be more subdued. It could be very subtle. We might see just a slight reduction in appetite and associated weight loss. So again, I commonly, you know, ask owners what's going on at home. They know best. If they have concerns, we need to take them very seriously. Reptiles, again, are very difficult to assess pain in. There are many published references for this, but because we're dealing with such a wide variety of different species across the class reptiles, they can be very different in their responses. Very severe pain, you do see responses, particularly in the smaller sort of lizards and geckos. We had an animal that was spayed recently, and certainly post operatively, it was very, very arched in its back. It wouldn't place its abdomen against the floor. It had a sort of deviated spine, and it looked very uncomfortable. So things like that can be very, very obvious, but they might also be quite subtle. I think also we can probably measure some of the physiological responses to pain in reptiles. Just last week I had a tortoise that had been unfortunately dropped 6 feet onto a concrete floor and had cracked its shell. That animal had a very elevated respiratory rate. Now obviously it could have been due to its injuries, but once we provided appropriate analgesia, the respiratory rate dropped from 36 a minute down to 6. So I think it was actually a physiological response to pain. So we can do basic measurements and record particularly respiratory rate, but we can also and we can look for more specific signs, as I mentioned, you know, signs of pain, perhaps lameness. Color changes are quite common in the smaller sort of geckos and chameleons as well. But then we can also, as in birds, look at general signs. So we might have an animal that stops feeding. It might just be sitting, reluctant to move. Now, obviously, with reptiles, what we need to ensure is that they are at their activity temperature range so that they are able to actually physiologically respond to pain because at an appropriate temperature. Obviously, if they're too cold, they're not going to respond in the same way. So, difficult in reptiles, but there are subtle changes that you can look for. There has been quite a good amount of information published on small mammals, and particularly obviously extrapolating from the laboratory animal side of things. I think as veterinary surgeons, we need to be sure of what is normal behaviour for that species. And again, this is where we can really sort of ask owners for feedback, and you know, they are very, very helpful often to sort of determine whether that animal might be in subtle pain. As I mentioned with prey species, they often do show more subtle signs of pain than dogs and cats and don't always tend to vocalise. One of the main responses to pain is immobility. So an animal that's just sitting, not really moving, not interested, you know, to come up and see you when you approach it at the front of a cage, that could well be signs of pain. Other things, thinking about more specific signs that we might be looking for, an animal that starts sort of chewing or self-traumatizing an area, which is quite common, certainly in the small rodents and chinchillas as well, perhaps over-grooming, an altered posture or lamenesses, these can all be signs that an animal is in discomfort. More generally, we might be wanting to measure things like social interaction, food intake, movement around the cage. And in rodents, there's quite a lot of work that looks at secretion of porphyrin. So we tend to get these sort of red pigmented discharge around the eyes. And also the coat can look more starey as well. And we're all very, very much aware of gastrointestinal stasis in rabbits, which can actually be life-threatening. This is something that it could just be a response to pain, and then we get a secondary GI stasis. So again, you know, we need to be thinking what's causing that pain. And it is very common to get rabbits with gut stasis associated with painful internal issues such as hepatitis or nephroliths or cystitis or something else that's causing pain, and then that rabbit has a secondary response by reduction in appetite and a reduction in the gastrointestinal movement. There are also scales that you can look at. Hopefully you've heard of the rabbit grimace scale. This is something that was developed by Newcastle University. I've put a link there so you can go and have a look at it, because it's actually got all the grades and pictures very nicely for you at that website. Usually these are facial changes that are associated with pain, and they are based on a scale of 0 to 3, so 0 being no pain and 3 being extreme pain. What they then looked at was certain key features associated with facial changes when an animal is in pain. So I've listed those there: cheek flattening, the nasal shape, orbital tightening, so that's looking at the eyes, the whisker shape and position, and the ear shape and position. And they looked at evaluating this using either tattooing without any local anesthetic application versus local anesthetic application, then tattooing. This has also been extrapolated to more severe painful sort of experiments or procedures, so that they can also use this for abdominal surgery, for instance, to assess grades of pain following surgery. So I'll just show you one picture here, and as I say, you can go to the website and have a look at all the other different ones. But it's quite interesting. So 0 is you don't see, there's no pain there. So looking at this picture that I'm showing you, this is of the nasal flaring. The top picture on the left shows you a rabbit that's hopefully not in any pain. The angle of its nostrils is very relaxed. And as we move further down to an animal at the bottom that is in pain, we can see there that obviously the nasal shape has become more angulated, and the whole face, actually, you can see that sort of flattening of the cheeks as well. So something that's quite subtle but can be very, very helpful. I think it's also important for us to consider what are the benefits of good analgesia, and obviously there's a lot of information out there about how beneficial this is. And it's amazing when you start reading about it, you know, you really can improve your patient recovery rates and healing times if you provide really good analgesia, because obviously it encourages normal behavior to resume. And the most important thing in these very small animals that have higher metabolic rates is to make sure that, you know, they get feeding again and we get normal behavior occurring. So I think, you know, we really do need to provide good and appropriate preemptive analgesia and continue until we're sure that that animal is no longer in any pain. And I think sometimes we do stop analgesia too soon. We are very cautious with our small furries, in particular rabbits. We do keep them always overnight post any surgery to ensure that they're eating, that we can provide really good analgesia, and then we gradually will wean them off still in the hospital, and finally once they're on just oral analgesia, then they can go home. Looking also at the detrimental effects if we don't provide enough analgesia, then there's a whole list here of real problematic things that can happen, we need to be providing it so that we don't get secondary issues such as listed here. And obviously all of those issues will contribute to a rapid demise in a small animal. The bottom one in particular, as we mentioned before, pain-related ileus can be rapidly fatal in rabbits. So we're coming on then to thinking, you know, what analgesics should I choose? And I think when you are looking through different options, you need to be thinking about a lot of variables. Obviously, how are you going to give that analgesic? Is it going to be something that is going to require the animal to be hospitalized because it's an injection potentially? Or is this something that could be taken home and the owner could give orally or topically? It also depends on the owner, and there's some owners that I would be very happy that they could medicate at home, but there are other owners who may not be able to do that. And it very much is a question of discussion with owner, and obviously your knowledge of that owner and their abilities. And it also depends on how long you're going to need to analgese the animal for, because obviously if it's going to be any great length of time, then we want the animal home back into its familiar environment. So the type of pain is also very important, and I sort of mentioned this a little bit earlier. Is this a very acute onset pain, or is it something that's going to be chronic, low grade perhaps, that requires long-term analgesia? We also want to be thinking about whether this is really deep visceral pain that's going to be extremely acute, or is this something that is perhaps more a dull ache, more somatic pain involving more sort of bones and connective tissue? And I would actually add to that, we also have neurogenic pain as well, which can be extremely intense pain. So that would be the third type of pain, which I haven't actually added to that slide. Most of these are not licensed in the exotic pet species, so we do have to think about the cascade, and we do really need to get signed consent from owners for using these. And we have to also look at what published information is available so that we can determine what's the best analgesic for that animal. I do think multimodal is good. We use a lot of multimodal analgesia, so we're giving different types of analgesics, perhaps simultaneously, or sometimes I'll stagger them. So if I'm sending a rabbit potentially home on oral analgesia, I might use meloxicam as a non-steroidal analgesic, but then stagger it with tramadol orally, both of which these drugs can be given orally, and we'll give the meloxicam first thing in the morning, and then we'll give a few hours later the tramadol orally, so that we're sort of increasing the time span that we're covering with our analgesic effect. And obviously preemptive is best, so we need to be getting in there, not doing it post-surgery, we need to getting in there with preemptive analgesia preoperatively. So I thought it might be helpful just to go through and sort of recap what are the main categories of analgesia. This was something that I found quite useful, and just trying to sort of compartmentalize it in my mind. I haven't really touched upon any alternative therapies, because there's very little information in exotic species. So things like acupuncture, you know, these are sort of areas that we really need to look at in more detail, but there's very little research. So I've listed the main sort of analgesia agents that we perhaps would use in practice in that list there, and we'll go through them all in a little bit more detail. I put non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs kind of top of my list, really, I think because, you know, probably we all do reach, particularly in rabbits, for meloxicam. It's an oral preparation. It's a relatively nice flavour. We can titrate doses very well. We do know that it's very well tolerated in rabbits, and there are sort of anecdotal reports that for long periods of time this can be used. Sometimes I'll start off with an injectable dose and then go on to oral medication, perhaps to go home. So really quite useful for chronic pain. One thing that I think I'm particularly bad at is not giving this if you've got an animal that's perhaps got renal issues or is dehydrated or has GI or hepatic problems. So actually a lot of rabbits that are coming in probably do fall into this category. And if I've got an older rabbit, I probably wouldn't start with meloxicam until I'm happy that the animal isn't A, dehydrated, or B, has underlying renal disease. What is interesting, obviously, you know, if you run a panel of bloods, quite often in rabbits, you will get normal urea creatinine values unless they are very, very severely affected. What I do find much more useful in rabbits is looking at urinary protein creatinine ratios. And there's one good paper that's published with the normal values, so that that is more likely to give you sort of fairly subtle changes associated with the kidneys in older rabbits. But yeah, something we need to think about and perhaps not rush for meloxicam in those particular cases. Thinking about opioid drugs, these are obviously drugs related to morphine. They're very commonly used associated with fractures or bone pain, or sort of deep visceral pain as well. There are a variety of routes that they can be given, and I think that we primarily would give these by injection. So a lot of these we are using within a hospital environment, and they aren't necessarily going home with owner. Full agonists such as morphine or partial agonists, and then you get mixed agonists as well. So I think these are, I'm hoping these are more and more being used, particularly in the small mammal species in veterinary practice. There are some documented side effects, and we'll come on to discuss these in just a minute. Local anesthetics, I think probably we all think, oh, we don't perhaps use them as much as we should. But when you start thinking about the applications for local anesthetics, there are so many. We do use them very routinely for infiltration of wounds, particularly in small rodents like rats, you know, following a mammary mass removal. Really helpful to reduce chewing at the site or trauma to the site. We also use local nerve blocks occasionally. More regularly, we would use dental nerve blocks in rabbits when you're removing incisors. Topical local anesthetics are very regularly used, actually, in our practice. We use them for application to a vein prior to venipuncture or placement of an IV catheter. And also, if we are doing things such as flushing tear ducts, we would use ocular local anesthetic drops. So lots of uses, and they can be really helpful in conjunction with your sort of usual non-steroidal or opiate analgesia. And quite often what I will do is use a short-acting, so we get immediate effect, mixed with a long-acting, so we're getting a much longer effect. So lidocaine and bupivacaine would be my choice, usually mixed in the same syringe, and perhaps given as a splash block or as an infiltrative block. One thing we do have to be a little bit careful with, there are some toxicities reported in some species, and we'll come on to look at these when we look at the individual groups of animals. So this is when I was thinking about all the applications for local anesthetics, particularly in small mammals. I've got the picture there of placement. You know, we've got an IV catheter placed. We would always use these routinely, and we find rabbits tolerate much better placement of IV catheters if they've had local cream applied first. Picture of the eye to just remind me to talk to you about tear duct flushing and application of proximetocaine eye drops. And then when we're intubating rabbits, we do also spray the larynx with a local anesthetic before placement of the endotracheal tube. I've got a picture also at the bottom on the right there showing a rabbit castrate that had a little bit of swelling, but this was one that we also local infiltrated so that hopefully the rabbit wouldn't start to chew or traumatize the area. There are other pain medications that we shouldn't forget, and there are more recently investigations looking into these and their use in small exotic pets. One that we use a lot is tramadol, and it's interesting looking at its action. We've got sort of opioid effects from this drug, but we've also got non-opioid effects as well. And there's a lot of anecdotal reports that this does seem to work fairly well in exotic pets, but most of it at the moment is anecdotal, unfortunately. Something that I have perhaps in the last year really started using much more is gabapentin, and this is something I would use for neuropathic pain. In particular, we are using these for our bulbar osteotomy cases where we may have nerve damage either following the actual surgery, or sometimes you'll get cases that present with existing nerve damage. And this seems to help in these cases. So I'd often use perhaps tramadol and gabapentin in conjunction. What is interesting in people, both of those drugs have sort of side effects and can make them quite disorientated. It's not really something we have observed in small exotic mammals, but obviously they can't talk to us. We don't know really how they're feeling. But I would have expected owners, you know, who are particularly diligent, to have noticed some change in behavior if they really were causing, you know, any sort of severe side effects. Something else I wanted to consider as well, ketamine at low doses has been used in exotic species, and this is to prevent CNS wind-up, and it's often given prior to surgery at very low doses. So, and now I'm going to look at, for the second half of the webinar, the different types of sort of groups, if you like, of patients. So we'll be looking at avian patients and what analgesics are best for these reptiles, and then on to small mammals. And then at the very end, I've got some sort of case studies that we can talk through as well. So as I mentioned with birds, what is normal behavior? What are signs of pain? Trauma is very, very common in the cetacean species, so this could be associated with pain and likely is. So something that I would consider very seriously if you had a bird that was really pulling at feathers or very uncomfortable, perhaps also lame or a wing drop as well. The sort of analgesics that are commonly used, butorphanol would probably be our go-to opiate analgesic. Interestingly, this should not be used in gyre falcons and owls, but it is something that if we were doing orthopedic surgery, we would be using. Buprenorphine has shown to be ineffective, particularly in African grey parrots, and so this is no longer used really in birds. And what is also interesting is more recently, tramadol, there are anecdotal reports that this seems to work in birds, and it is something I've been using fairly routinely in birds as an oral preparation that owners can take home, and it does seem to work relatively well. Again, if I'm worried about using a non-steroidal, you know, with renal issues, then I might go for tramadol instead. Another sort of go-to would be meloxicam orally. There are plenty of reports of non-steroidal toxicity in old world vultures, so we do have to be a wee bit careful. Meloxicam, though, there are some good, well-documented dose rates in birds. And I've got these in a slide coming up for you as a reference source, so we can go through that in a minute. There is one report that talks about fairly low doses potentially causing renal issues in budgerigars, but it is a drug that I use very routinely in birds, and again, it's oral, so they can go home with it, and I do feel it has an effect. There are case reports of use of gabapentin in birds, and also, again, we probably need to be thinking more about using our local anesthetics. However, at much higher doses, they can very rapidly be fatal, so we would be using low doses like 1 mg/kg in birds. So talking about meloxicam in a little bit more detail, we do know it's relatively safe in Amazon parrots. But as I mentioned, there was this one report in budgerigars that caused minor changes following administration of meloxicam to the renal glomeruli. But interestingly, it didn't actually affect renal function. And that was at very low doses, I think 0.1 to 0.2 mg per kg. I tend to use a dose of 0.5 mg per kg, and the problem is that in different species it's been shown to have different lengths of action and also reach different therapeutic levels. So in one study in hawks and owls, it really had only an effect for 1 to 2 hours. So really difficult, but I do think this is quite a good go-to analgesia as long as you don't have renal disease or dehydration. The opiates we talked about in pigeons, there's a study that shows that they primarily have kappa receptors in the brain. We often go for the use of butorphanol, but it has to be given very, very frequently. And the dose rates have been shown to vary widely in different species of animals. But for instance, if I was spaying this chicken here, I would be using butorphanol preemptively and also in the post-operative, immediate post-operative period. Tramadol I'd mentioned, orally twice a day. I have found this very useful. I sometimes use this in feather plucking birds where you're concerned that this might be secondary to pain. Also gabapentin, as I mentioned, and I'll have a dose rate for you in the table that's coming up. This has been shown to have some effect when you've got neuropathic pain and secondary self-trauma, but we do need to do more work to find out appropriate dose rates. And then there is one study of using ketamine once daily IM at a relatively low dose to prevent CNS wind-up in a falcon that was also self-traumatizing. So this is the slide that I mentioned that we've got all the different dose rates in birds on. So hopefully you can use this as a good reference guide. Looking at it, I'd sort of mentioned not really using buprenorphine. The main one would be butorphanol, and I tend to use a 1 to 2 mg per kg dose, sort of erring on the side of caution, I guess. I haven't really mentioned pethidine, but there are studies looking at pethidine in birds. And that's another possibility to use that. And the tramadol, again, I'd mentioned, and there's also a dose rate there for gabapentin, which hopefully you'll find useful. With both the lidocaine and bupivacaine, I tend to do a 1 mg per kg dose rate. So hopefully you can come back to that slide and refer to it. Excuse me. I've also got some good references here for avian patients. Again, hopefully you can use this as a reference guide and look these up. The other thing I commonly use is Carpenter's formulary, and this is a really good exotic animal formulary that has dose rates. And you're also probably aware of the BSAVA exotic pet formulary, and again, this is a really good information source that is invaluable in practice. So a few references for you, again, to come back and look at in your own time. Moving on to reptile patients, as I mentioned, there's so many diverse species. We've got, you know, crocodilia, we've got snakes, chelonia, and all the lizards. So, you know, it's really, really diverse group. And when we've got pain studies, there are very few species that we've actually looked at pain responses in. They've often used species that are commonly kept in practice, which is quite helpful. Much more recent work has really shown that the analgesics we used to use and assume worked don't anymore. Well, not that they don't anymore, but they've certainly been shown that they don't work. So whereas we might have used butorphanol, buprenorphine in the past, these are not now considered good analgesics for reptiles. So in severe pain, my go-to would be morphine And the tortoise that I mentioned I had in last week with the cracked shell, that was what we gave it. Now, it was just out of hibernation. It was dehydrated. So I went for a 0.5 mg per kg dose initially, which we repeated after 12 hours. And that certainly seemed to have an effect. One thing that is very difficult is analgesia in snakes. There really is very little that we can use because all the studies that have been done have been shown not to be effective. So morphine, which we would now perhaps use as our main hospitalized analgesia in bearded dragons, turtles and tortoises, in snakes we can't use this. Even at high doses, it doesn't seem to have an effect. Looking at these other drugs that we might have more readily available, methadone works well in redded sliders, so these are redded terrapins, and pethidine in tortoises. Really encouragingly, tramadol orally seems to have a really good analgesic effect in chelonia, and it seems to cause less respiratory depression than using the opiates. So this is something we could potentially send an animal that was eating home on, or if it was a very small volume, we might have an owner who's able to open the tortoise's mouth easily and pop it onto their tongue. Obviously, if we're talking about the bigger species, this isn't going to be possible. Meloxicam certainly seems to be safe, but the problem is all the reports that are out there don't know whether it's actually effective or not. There are very few actual pain studies. So we know that we can have dose rates that are safe and don't have side effects, but we don't know if they're actually working. Again, something I probably am very bad at doing is using local anesthetics in reptiles. But again, they seem to work fairly well and have been sort of looked at in chelonia. The only thing, again, like with birds, we need to be thinking about toxicity, so keep the dose low. I mentioned about not using butorphanol or buprenorphine. These do not seem to be effective in reptiles. Interestingly, it's more the mu receptor agonists that seem to work better. At higher doses, you can cause death if you've got a very debilitated animal with any of these opioids, so you do have to be very cautious. So as I mentioned to you with the tortoise that I'd seen, I went for a very low dose because it was debilitated, it was dehydrated, and we augmented that within the 24-hour period. So here's another big table with all the dose rates for you so that you can use this as a reference. I do tend to be quite cautious with meloxicam. I tend to go lower dose and I tend to, depending on the patient, either get it daily or every other day. With morphine, it's very much a daily once-off dose, whereas if you wanted to use, for instance, pethidine, this is a much more regular repeated dose, so it might be less practical in the clinical setting. Dose rates also given there for the oral doses of tramadol, and there have been some really good studies in those different species I've listed there, and that's where dose rates have come from. So use that as a reference source for yourselves, and you can look up different analgesics that you might want to be using in your reptile patients. There are also some very good relatively new references out there looking at analgesics in reptiles, and particularly Dr. Sladke and Dr. Manns have done a lot of work in this area and have published quite a good overall sort of review of analgesia in reptiles. So I would urge you to go and have a look at those. Moving on to mammal patients, signs of pain, what is normal behaviour? Hopefully we're all a little bit more aware in our mammal patients than perhaps in birds and reptiles of what really is a sign of pain. And very quickly they will go off their food, so anorexia and GI issues are very common. The list is a bit more extensive as well for our mammal patients. You can see there there are quite a few different analgesics that we can be using, and at the end, a new thing, the continuous rate infusion, this is something that we do use certainly quite relatively regularly in animals that have severe pain. So probably, well, certainly in any thoracotomy cases, we're doing less of these actually for thymomas as we're using radiotherapy more. But thoracotomy would be one such case that we definitely want to be using a continuous rate infusion. Also for our bulbar osteotomy cases, we will often use this method for our analgesia. Opioids, we do need to be thinking about their side effects, and certainly at higher doses they can cause respiratory depression and lethargy, and certainly I do see this in debilitated animals in particular when we're giving methadone, which we use quite routinely at the hospital. They are fairly rapidly acting. Obviously, if they're given IV, they're immediate. We do not tend to use, well, we don't use morphine in rabbits because it does cause instant respiratory depression and bradycardia. Interesting, I found a reference that talked about buprenorphine in rats causing problems at high doses. So this is a much, much higher dose than I would use in clinical practice. We tend to use 0.03 to 0.05 mg per kg as a dose rate. So this is 10 times that value. Other things that we use tramadol, there is a nice report of it working in rats at 10 mg per kg orally, and in rabbits there is one paper that was published at 11 mg per kg, and it seemed to gain reasonable therapeutic levels, but not as high as would be causing therapeutic levels in humans. So in the rabbits that were given that dose, they questioned whether this would actually provide appropriate analgesia. Anecdotally, I feel it does work well. I mean, certainly if you're giving it to patients, we do see a response, and owners report that the animals seem more comfortable. But obviously we need a lot more work done on this drug in the small mammal pets. Again, gabapentin, pretty much all of the information about this drug in small mammals is anecdotal. Again, all I can say is that it does seem to help in certain cases. We mentioned our local anaesthetics, and there's such a wide variety of applications for this. There are some really good references. You can look up how to do epidurals in rabbits and guinea pigs, and the dental nerve blocks are something that's worth looking into if you're doing incisor removal in rabbits, and I popped a reference at the bottom there that sort of talks through that process quite nicely. We all probably do reach for our meloxicam bottle in rabbits. It is interesting, though, that they tend to have lower peak plasma concentrations and metabolize the drug a lot faster than actually cats, dogs, and rats. So, you know, are we providing good enough analgesia? Quite often find rabbits that come in that have been referred are on quite a low dose of meloxicam, and I tend to go quite high. We routinely would give 0.6 mg per kg by mouth twice a day, and I have used that long term in rabbits that I'm happy do not have, you know, renal issues, and we're often sort of monitoring for that as we're giving that drug longer term. And the other thing I worry about with meloxicam is whether there could be GI side effects. So I often will put an animal that's on long-term oral meloxicam onto ranitidine as well, in the hope that this might prevent those GI side effects. Here's another table just to give you dose rates for all the drugs that we've talked about. I would say, I sort of mentioned, we use methadone fairly routinely in rabbits. I usually give it 0.5 mg per kg, going for a sort of middle of the road dose. very slow IV, because if you've got a debilitated animal, you can then see the effect it's having. And I give it 4 hourly, and it does seem to work very, very well. There are obviously a lot of other opiates that you can use there. We quite often do use buprenorphine in our GI cases where we're worried about pain. And because we're a teaching hospital, we tend to go for 0.03 mg per kg dose of buprenorphine, which is right in the middle, partly because if we have a problem where perhaps a student may give a second injection too early or drop the wrong volume, we've got a little bit of volume to play with there. So, you know, we're going sort of We could quite happily have a second injection given, and the rabbit would still just be within therapeutic range. So it's a safety thing really for us. So have a look at all those doses. Hopefully that's a good reference source for you, and hopefully you'll be able to take these dose rates and use them in practice. And there is one, again, it's anecdotal, for gabapentin as well. I tend to go for the twice daily dose of the lower 5 mg per kg in rabbits. I mentioned the continuous rate infusions. The advantages of these is that you can use very low amounts continuously, so you have fewer side effects such as respiratory depression and perhaps a more stable regular analgesia. The only downside is that you have to use the appropriate kit, and also it can be quite slow in onset, so you use a higher loading dose initially and then go on to lower, longer term doses. And it does say watch out for GI stasis, or if you've got pre-existing GI stasis, be careful. I think in the cases where you're using this, you're hopefully monitoring the animal very closely for GI side effects as well, and they will be given fluids too. So these are the sort of dose rates that you can use. I've got the loading dose there and then the infusion rate, and we use a combination as detailed with ketamine, dex, medetomidine and methadone. So again, that's a reference table for you to go back to and use as need be. I also want to look up any sort of newer references for you, just to give you some ideas and perhaps some background reading if you're interested. There is quite a good reference by Dr. Wenger, and this is one that perhaps you could go away and have a look at and read about in more detail. So just finally, really, to finish up, I've got a few cases. I just thought, you know, some common presentations and just talking through with you what I would use in these cases in terms of analgesia. So this case one is a four-year-old Harris hawk. It presented with swellings on the base of its feet. It was missing a digit on one foot, and it seemed uncomfortable. It was shifting, weight-bearing, and owner had reported that it had been quite lame, and he was concerned. There was some weight loss as well. When we examined it, obviously you can see it's pretty severe, the degree of pododermatitis. And this is obviously, we're not going to talk through how we would actually manage the case, but we're looking at surgery to sort this out. But my question really to you is, what analgesia would you provide perhaps in the first instance? And are there any husbandry changes we could make that might help with alleviating pain? So we're not always necessarily thinking just about the drugs we can use. There might be some physical things that we can do to help that animal. So certainly if you were doing surgery and bringing the animal in, we might be using butorphanol. But to go home on, we're thinking about our oral medications, and we know that we can use meloxicam safely in this species as long as it's well hydrated. I'm very careful with meloxicam to always go through the dose rate and amount with owners. I did have a bird of prey many years ago that owner had got confused and gave 10 times the dose of meloxicam over a period of a couple of days before they realized, and the bird died. So we have got to be careful. It's written obviously on the drugs that we're dispensing. We often will give a discharge sheet with it written down, and I will actually get a syringe out and show the owner the volume to give as well. Tramadol orally, I think, is worth a try, and we might want to stagger those doses. So we're giving, you know, a proper sort of spread of analgesia over a 24-hour period. And we could also use some local anesthetics as well. But obviously, if we're using those, we shouldn't be using them directly on wounds because they can actually slow healing. I think also thinking about covering that perch with a softer material so that it's more comfortable for the animal to stand on it. And that was the sort of husbandry changes I was thinking about. And also making sure that the perch itself is kept with good hygiene. I've sort of talked a little bit about shell injuries in Chelonia, but this was a case, a very young 3-year-old Horsfield's tortoise that had been attacked by a dog. And you can see some fairly superficial wounds to the shell. Now, obviously, it could be a lot deeper, but this is going to be acutely painful for this animal. And interestingly, you will see very elevated respiratory rates in Chelonia that have got shell injuries. Oh, there you go. I've answered my question. What signs of pain might you see and what analgesia would you provide? I do think looking at respiratory rate and also gait, you know, an animal that's been attacked may well be in shock. It probably won't be moving around very much. Or if it is moving around, maybe it's not using all its limbs as it would normally. So, and anorexia as well in animals that are in pain. Reptiles in particular, they will go off their food. So these are the sort of clinical signs we might see associated with pain. In terms of analgesia, if we're concerned this is pretty severe pain, I would use morphine. Usually tend to go for the lower dose range, so 1 mg per kg IM, and I would repeat it in 24 hours. So often if we've got the animal in, we could give that straight away, we could clean up the wound and bandage, and then maybe give it another dose before it goes home in the morning the next day. Going home, we might want to think about oral meloxicam or tramadol. And I put in there, if you're not wanting to go for morphine, we could use pethidine if it's hospitalized every 4 hours instead. I've questioned local anaesthetics. Again, we don't want to delay healing, but this might be something that would help just topically on that area for the initial period. This is a wee rabbit that has undergone a bulbar osteotomy and a partial ear canal ablation. These are very painful procedures, and we do see anorexia, increased respiratory rates and so forth after these operations. Usually these animals are on intravenous fluids. So with my question here, I wanted to ask how we would optimize analgesia immediately postoperatively and also ensure that there's a maintenance of level of analgesia for a period of time following surgery. This is where we can use our continuous rate infusion. And I think, you know, this is something that we are using fairly routinely and is working well. I had a rabbit in with a fracture just the other week. And again, you know, it was pretty painful, and setting it up onto continuous rate infusion certainly helped that animal in its recovery. And then I think this is the final case. This is just looking at a very common presentation, a female rat with a mammary mass that's been removed. What would we consider? It actually says they're postoperative analgesia, but we would give preoperative analgesia in this case. So just thinking through what we might want to use. So we talked about opioids, non-steroidals, local blocks, observed behavior, and then home on oral medications such as tramadol or meloxicam. For our mass removals, we do tend to use pre-med buprenorphine, and we'll also give oral meloxicam or injectable meloxicam as well, plus obviously fluids, so we're happy that the animal's hydrated. We do use local blocks as well routinely. Rats in particular, as I'm sure you're all aware, are quite sort of prone to chewing at sutures. This poor little one here has had to have a little collar put on, which does seem to help in these cases. This is just a little bit of pipe lagging foam that's been cut to size, and then a little bit of vet wrap, and then elastoplast around it. It still probably could reach the area, but it is going to reduce the amount it's chewing at that area. And we would be keeping this animal in overnight and giving appropriate analgesia as follow-up. Sometimes I've had to even sedate them with a little bit of diazepam as well, and that seems to also just sort of damp down the urge to chew. This animal in particular is enjoying a large bowl of Emerade Omnivore as a convalescent diet. So just in conclusion, really, there is a lack of published information out there, but there is more and more evidence that, you know, analgesics do work, and that we have now sort of got suggested dose rates. We do have to provide analgesia so we feel better and hopefully the animal feels better. But I often ask myself, is this really effective? And more work really needs to be done. So I want to start to finish on a couple of questions that have actually come through. One question, which I haven't really touched on this actually, is can you use transmucosal buprenorphine in rabbits? And this is something that we had looked at because actually, rather than injecting buprenorphine, we could potentially send the rabbit home with the owner administering it transmucosally. And it has been looked at in dogs and cats in quite some detail. There is a reference certainly for its use in rabbits. They looked at injectable buprenorphine and plasma concentrations versus transmucosal. And unfortunately, they did find that the transmucosal dose rates had to be much higher and didn't seem to reach the same level of plasma concentrations as injectables. So it isn't something that we have pursued at Edinburgh, and I do think perhaps more work needs to be done with that. I think they also found it quite difficult to administer, and whether owners would find they were actually more giving an oral dose rather than actually applying it to the mucosa. I think that would be difficult. The other question I had was about the use of fentanyl patches in rabbits. This is something that has been looked at in dogs and cats, and people are using. Again, there are some papers in rabbits looking at blood concentrations of fentanyl post-patch placement. They looked at whether shaving was better versus using a cream to remove hair. And what they found is that actually if you used a cream to remove the hair, the absorption was much, much better. There is evidence that the therapeutic levels are reached in rabbits using the patches, but they tend to decline relatively rapidly. And so by sort of 72 hours, a very, very low levels of fentanyl within the blood. So again, you know, something to look at, but we haven't really explored their use in a clinical setting at Edinburgh Vet School. And that's not to say that they can't be used, but I've always had concerns, you know, if an animal's back in with a companion animal, the grooming aspect of it, they may well be able to scratch a patch off. And there have been some reports of sort of local dermatitis associated with patch application. So again, there are references out there, so do go have a look. And if this is something you want to consider using, then, you know, there is some research that has been done in rabbits. So I'm hopeful that that has been an interesting session for you, and I appreciate your joining us today. And do get in touch with me if you've ever got any further questions. Not a problem to email me, and you know, let me know that you've been listening in on the webinar. Okay, thank you very much. Bye-bye.
On behalf of Webinar Club, I'd like to thank Emma for a great presentation today. The recording and the certificate for this webinar will be available in the next few days in the members area of Webinar Club. Thank you all for attending. That's the end of the webinar.